This report exposes facts, identifies responsibility, unravels myths, and helps us understand how this crisis could have been avoided.
Phil Angelides, the chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, reporting this morning at this hour on the roots of the housing and Wall Street meltdown. The commission is holding a news conference right now as it presents its findings about who to blame for the irresponsibility on Wall Street and in government and how to prevent this from happening again. We'll hear some more excerpts. Our business editor, Charlie Herman, has been listening to the news conference. Hey, Charlie.
Hello.
What's the headline?
Well, the headline is that this was avoidable, that they sort of keep insisting that this is not some act of God that happened, but this is actually the result of a series of missteps and a series of policies, a series of decisions that were made at different points. I've been trying to read as much as I can of the nearly 600-page book, which, as you see here, is very much like the cover of it looks very much like the 9/11 report, like the Iran-Contra report from the 80s. So very much sort of putting it on the fact that this is that the crisis was avoidable, that there were failures in regulation, there was failure by corporations, that there was excessive borrowing by the corporations as well as individuals. The government was ill-prepared, and there was just an overall breakdown in accountability.
And that commission chairman, Phil Angelides, knowing a soundbite and how to craft one, has a one-minute clip here with a list of the six major conclusions that they drew. Let's listen.
At the end of our inquiry, we reached six major conclusions. Every commissioner here today stands firmly behind each and every one of them. We concluded, first and foremost, that this crisis was avoidable. Despite the expressed view of many in the circles of financial and political power that the crisis could not have been foreseen, there were many, many warning signs that were ignored or discounted. Second, we found widespread failures in financial regulation. Third, our report describes dramatic breakdowns in corporate governance and risk management. Fourth, we detail how the explosive brew of excessive borrowing, risky investments, and lack of transparency put our financial system on a collision course with crisis. Fifth, we concluded that key policymakers, our government, was ill-prepared for this crisis, and that their inconsistent response added to uncertainty and panic. And finally, this report explains how breaches in accountability and ethics became widespread at all levels during the run-up to the crisis.
Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission Chairman Phil Angelides from just a few minutes ago, running down the six major causes. Charlie Herman, our business editor, is here. We are going to play some more clips. We may have time for some phone calls. Listeners, I can't promise it, but if you want to try to get in and react, 212-433-WNYC, are they getting at it, in your opinion? And we'll also talk about the Republican dissenting report, which is not completely different, but it is different. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Charlie Herman, I mean, it's a little mind-numbing in a way because, in a way, we've been hearing about those six underlying causes for 2 years now. And it sort of comes out in the wash as blame everybody and everything.
There is a little bit to, and I'm quoting Shakespeare here because the report even quotes Shakespeare, a pox on all houses from Romeo and Juliet. In the report, he talks about that the fault lies not in the stars but in us. And I think you're right that the thing that comes out of this report is perhaps no great shocker, no great smoking gun, but more a synthesis of all the various different factors and players that are out there. Brings it all together in one report. There is dissent about, as you said, from the Republicans who were on the commission in terms of where to focus the attention. The main report sort of focuses on a whole host of issues. The dissenting voice, one of them says, look, you focus on so much you lose value. If you sort of look at everything, you forget what's specific and important. And then there's one final dissent, which basically is almost a chicken and egg type argument, arguing that government policies promoting home ownership led to this, you know, securitization and loans and lending, and it was because of that policy we got into this mess. You could argue it was because of the availability of all these types of loans out there that fueled homes purchases that got us into the mess.
There is a name that keeps coming up, and we're going to play a clip that you pulled in a minute that cites that name. but
there is one person, yes.
The former Fed chairman, the former master of the universe, the formerly referred to as the wise man on the mountain.
The maestro.
Alan Greenspan. Do you want to set up this clip of John Thompson? Who is John Thompson?
So John Thompson is the chairman of the board for Symantec. He was one of the commissioners on the panel who voted in favor of the majority report. And basically, he sort of looked at the regulators and in particular points to one particular regulator, the one we're just talking about, who does bear, they believe, a large amount of responsibility for the financial crisis.
It is clear the sentries were not at their post. This was in large part because of a widely accepted belief in the self-correcting nature of the markets and the ability of the financial firms to police themselves. This misplaced confidence in deregulation of a highly competitive industry was championed by the former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan and others, and supported by successive administrations and Congresses. Our report describes how this laissez-faire approach opened wide gaps in the government's oversight in key parts of our financial system in which trillions of dollars were at risk. These included the huge trading market in over-the-counter derivatives and the less regulated part of our financial system that came to be called the shadow banking system. And in some areas where federal oversight existed, the government allowed financial firms to select their preferred regulators, setting off a race to the weakest supervisor. We, however, do not accept the view that regulators lacked power to protect the financial system. They had ample power in many arenas, and they chose not to use it.
And I think what he was really saying here is that the Federal Reserve had – they were one of the few bodies there that had the power and the authority to really step in and police these mortgages that were being issued, and that they could have prevented this – a lot of this from happening. Yes, there are a lot of other issues, derivatives, a lot of things happening in terms of risk-taking by banks, but the Federal Reserve could have done more and chose not to.
Belief excessively in the self-correcting nature of markets, John Thompson said, in the laissez-faire approach, misplaced confidence in deregulation. I can hear Ayn Rand turning in her grave. I can hear Rand Paul turning in his Senate seat and anybody else named Rand. Is there going to be a lot of Republican – obviously there is Republican pushback to that kind of conclusion because the Republicans on the commission issued their own dissenting report.
Well, I think yes, because you're already hearing people talk about the Dodd-Frank bill, which is the financial regulatory bill that's gone through, and they're writing the regulations, and you're hearing about lobbyists from the financial industry as well as others saying, wait a minute, don't go too far with regulation here. You're going to stifle innovation. Remember, the president talked about that a couple days ago. We need to be able to innovate, and if we can't innovate, that'll prevent economic growth. Those are a lot of the same arguments that we heard during the run-up to this crisis, and the worry is that do you put pressure on those regulators and that they don't put in those sorts of rules to prevent this from happening? In terms of the dissenters, I mean, what you're hearing here is that while there are differences, they also, in the main dissent, they point out a lot of the same issues too. They point to the credit bubble worldwide, the amount of money that was available. But Phil Angelides, when asked about the dissent, basically point out that there was a lot of similarity between them.
And here he is saying that.
I should also note that the dissent, at least that filed by three of the commissioners, itself says we find areas of agreement with a majority conclusion. In many respects, the role of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, credit rating agencies, the seriousness of mortgage fraud. But I would say this, there are fundamental differences. We believe that this crisis was avoidable. We believe that it was a result of human action and inaction. I believe our report speaks for itself.
And listeners, we have on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, an informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific opinion poll to coincide with the release of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission report. Who do you blame most for the financial crisis? Go and register your response at itsafreecountry.org. Let's take a couple of phone calls. We have a few minutes. Let's see what people are saying. Sheila on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm not an expert on economics, but my view is that maybe we substituted jobs for credit. That's why we've gotten into this problem. And I want to make two other points, that Reaganomics is non-applicable today. And another point is that maybe we need this recession for the rest of the world to modernize. I mean, I wouldn't want the United States just to be modernized. It would be nice for everybody else to be, you know.
I hear you. You think if that is if the United States recession makes us lay low in a way that provides an opportunity for growth for other nations. But I think that's a whole other conversation. But Sheila's first point was really interesting, that we substituted as a country, both as government policy and as personal policy, we substituted earnings from jobs we substituted the money we borrowed through credit for earnings that we would have gotten through jobs.
You definitely saw that the financial industry was becoming a much larger share of the amount of profits that corporations were making. And compared to a time where it was more manufacturing or other sectors that were responsible for corporate profits, the financial sector was becoming more and more sort of the engine of economic growth.
Antonia in Emerson, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Thank you. Hello, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. This situation reminds me of an essay called The Tragedy of the Commons, which is used to explain environmental degradation. And I'd like to offer an analogy. The credit markets were a common resource, just like the common pastures that are so common in England, where if the farmer added one more cow, or I should say one more sheep, he got the total benefit of bringing it to market, but the degradation of the pasture
eventually too many sheep and the whole pasture went to seed and everybody suffered.
Right.
And that applies here, how?
Well, what we've got is a change in how financial instruments were used. People used to have a mortgage and then the bank held it for 30 years. Now we've broken up the system whereby one guy proposes the mortgage to the client, then sells that mortgage to a servicer, who then bundles it up with other mortgages and sells that to an investor.
And I get I'm going to have to move on for time, but I get your analogy to the tragedy of the commons. So many people with a piece of these mortgages.
The report singled that out, saying that problem of the individual who, you know, lies about their income to the mortgage lender, who goes and then sells that to a Wall Street firm, who then sells it to an investor, that it's passed along and no one has skin in the game, and that at the same time, no one really looked at the quality of the mortgage to figure out its worth.
Did they express an opinion about whether the Dodd-Frank bill or any other regulatory change prevents the preventable from happening again?
Well, you know, I'm trying to read through that to see if they speak directly to that. They talk about the fact that, and this is quoting from the report, the greatest tragedy would be to accept the refrain that no one could have seen this coming and thus nothing could have been done. If we accept this notion, it will happen again. And I think that what you've seen here, well, what I'm very curious about is how will this report be taken? How will it be used, considering that the Dodd-Frank bill has already been passed, that they are already in the process of writing the regulations, and that you have yesterday the Inspector General for the TARP, the Bank Bailout Program, telling Congress and in a report that too big to fail still basically exists. Treasury Department disputes that. I guess we'll only know if one of those banks fails and suddenly we have to step in to save it again.
Let's hope not. Jim in Sayreville, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
The great documentary film Inside Job interviews the great economist at NYU, Nouriel Roubini, who said the reason why the culprits on Wall Street were not caught is that there was no investigation. The reason there was no investigation is that Wall Street bribed the Congress to prevent an investigation. So what we have now, Brian, is a corporate oligarchy, 26 lobbyists for every congressman in Washington. So the Congress no longer represents the people. They represent only the corporate billionaire lobbies.
And Jim, again, I got to go for time, but his point is very clear, probably represents what many listeners are thinking right now. And what was that stat from the report? I forget the number of the total millions of dollars spent by banks on lobbying, you know, from the 1990s through 2008, whatever that large number in the millions is, you know, it says the government was owned by Wall Street. Did they say that too explicitly?
They didn't come out and say that explicitly, but they did talk about that the lobbying on behalf of corporations had a big effect in terms of what sorts of regulations were put in place and the effect of the government to stop in, or regulators to stop in and say no, that there was really no one willing to come in and pull the punch bowl away, whether it's because of political ideology as in Ayn Rand or for whatever reasons.
Another interesting thing to me, and we've got about a minute left, is that the main report says the feds not only failed to stop the banks from doing all this, they actually stopped states that saw the problems coming from regulating on their own.
If this was a problem where you had multiple different agencies that oversaw different banks, and so what you had were institutions basically shopping around trying to find the bank where they could get the regulator, where they could get the easiest amount of regulation, really. And then when states tried to step in, those same regulators stepped in and said, you can't do that. These are nationwide banks. We have to have one nationwide policy. It's still a problem, actually.
Well, now we've got everybody all angry again. After people had maybe moved on a little bit, now this commission is out with its report, and we're angry all over again.
I will say, you know, from what I have read of it, it reads pretty well, but that may be because I'm so steeped in it. But it's definitely something if you want to know what happened. There are a lot of documents, 700 witnesses, 19 days of public hearings, and a lot of information that's never been put out there.
And hopefully the new policies will make a difference. Now, we're done talking about the FCIC for now, but the panel discussion continues, and our politics website, It's a Free Country, has live video of the news conference as well as a Twitter stream showing what people are buzzing about this. Check it all out right now at itsafreecountry.org. WNYC business editor Charlie Herman, thanks a lot.
Thank you.